I am saying the same thing that Mrs. Gordon is saying. We want to keep Senator Javits there. We know that it seems to us, those of us who are a little bit knowledgeable, that I would rather see someone there that knows, and anyone knows politics, know politics is a game, and you better know the game. And anyone also knows that when you first come in, you do not have any power in the Senate. So again, I would say I endorse him. I know the work that he has done. When one of the things that I became involved with Senator Javits, because at that time I was a Democrat, and even though I'd call on him and ask for things to be done, he's always taken time out to do it. So I would say I endorse him. And I think many of the blacks that I have spoken to are also going to endorse him.
My name is Ann Heavener, and I'm president of the New York chapter of the National Ribbon Society. First point I'd like to make is that we are a Republican organization. We are a research and policy organization and played an instrumental role in the last 20 years in getting major pieces of legislation through the United States Congress and the New York State Legislature. We would not have been able to be effective in what we were doing had it not been for Senator Javits. Perhaps the single most effective role that he took and he placed in the equal rights movement was the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which is a piece of legislation that took a great deal of courage. Senator Javits, along with Dirksen, were very much on the outs within the Republican Party when it came to passing the Civil Rights Act of 1964. But from that single act stemmed most of the legislation in the next 16 years that had to do with equal rights, not only for women, but for minorities and senior citizens as well. Some of the things that we seem to forget is talk is cheap. Senator Javits's Democratic opponent does a great deal of talking, but do we have any evidence that she knows how to deal with getting pieces of legislation passed? Example one, we forget that the senator has played a very active role on the Labor Committee, on the Health Subcommittee in particular, to get such bills passed as pregnancy disability, rape prevention, family care. We forget that he was a co-author and the instrumental force in getting Title IX passed, which gave women equal educational opportunity. Are we going to let this slide by? The senator is still an effective force in Washington, and we would like to see that continue. As for the middle class, I would like to know how his Republican opponent would react when Grumman loses defense contracts because we have no senior representation in Washington to guarantee that those contracts are going to remain in New York State. What happens when middle class employees become unemployed and have to go to the either welfare lines or start collecting unemployment insurance? Does that still qualify them as middle class? What about senior citizens? Middle-class senior citizens who retire, they lose their pensions. Do we soon forget that Senator Javits was major instrumental force in passing the Pension Reform Act of 1975? These people are living on limited incomes. Does that qualify them to be sent out to pasture the way the Senator Javits's Republican opponent has suggested for the senator? Is this an example of what we want in Washington? I hardly think so. As long as Senator Javits is the effective force that he is in Washington and represents not only New York State, but the Northeastern United States as well, and we are going to lose seniority. We're losing Ribicoff, we're losing McEwen. We have no seniority in New York. We have no seniority outside of Tip O'Neill in the Northeastern United States. Are we going to allow continued tax dollars to float to other portions of the United States because we don't have an effective spokesman in Washington to guarantee that those tax dollars are going to stay in New York? That's the issue. And as such, the Ribbon Society, as a Republican organization, continues to support the senator, and we would encourage every individual who has any vested interest in their future in the northeastern part, and particularly in New York State, to do the same. Thank you.
My name is Carol Lamberg. I've worked in the field of housing, low and moderate income housing, for 20 years and have been actively involved in legislation. Senator Javits has literally introduced dozens of crucial amendments, most of them very highly technical. Since 1974, none of the housing programs could have worked in New York City and other high-cost urban areas without these various amendments. If anyone ever has a complicated amendment to get through, wherever they're from, they ask Senator Javits to introduce it because he's the only one who could possibly understand it, no less introduce it and defend it on the floor. His staff is also consistently of the highest quality, accessible, and very good at follow through. Whenever I've been in Senator Javits' office on housing business, the staff has been also actively involved in equally impressive legislation, voting rights, women's rights, the War Powers Bill. I remember particularly the involvement at that time. As a woman and as a Democrat, ordinarily I'd be expected to support Liz Holtzman. I went to school with her. I knew her. But we can't possibly afford to lose Senator Javits. There's no one even closely comparable in the field of housing legislation, and that's not even his specialty at all. We ought to keep him.
My name is Rita Hauser. I'm a lawyer in the international field and former representative to the United Nations Commission on Human Rights. Jack Javits has been my friend for all of my adult life, and I know of no figure in politics who has carried as much compassion and interest in the cause of issues that women are deeply involved in that go beyond the limited scope of, strictly speaking, women's issues. My field is international law, and I would like to tell you all of the enormous role that Javits has played in the last years as the senior ranking minority figure in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, where his impact on issues that bear on war and peace and economic development in the world has been absolutely singular. There's been no stronger voice that I know of in the United States Senate on the question of aid to the less developed countries, to the problems of the poor in the world at large, of which the largest component is women. When we were preparing, I was a delegate to the International Conference on Women in Mexico City, the first conference that was held. The senator was involved in every stage of the paperwork, the planning, the issues. He has an enormous grasp of the need for the vast numbers, millions in the world who constitute the third world. He is a very strong friend of Israel. If we lose the senator in his voice in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, it is very difficult for me to see where we will find a stronger and better friend of Israel than we have in him. I think it's imperative that he be reelected, and I think when women as well as men take a look at his record, it's absolutely conclusive that the vote should be cast for Jack Javits.
I'm Lorraine Colville. I'm an associate professor of government and public administration at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, and I've been active in politics a long while, and particularly in Democratic politics. And I'm here today for a very selfish reason. I want the best, and I don't have to say very much about Senator Javits, because I think everybody agrees he's the best. I find when I wear my button, people will say, you know, good man, very good. And sometimes I'll say, well, are you going to vote for the senator? Well, some will say, I don't know if he can win, or if I vote for Javits, I may elect so-and-so, or if I vote for so-and-so, then so-and-so. Well, that's nonsense. And I'd like to remind all of them, as I've been doing these past few days, that in 1950 in the city of New York, there was a special election for mayor, and a man was running on an independent ticket called the Experience Party. Ridiculous to elect someone for mayor of the city of New York on a independent line against a very formidable Democratic opponent, an outstanding Republican. You know what happened? Everyone said he couldn't make it, he probably won't win, but they had sense enough to go in that booth and just pull it. And they did elect an independent candidate in the city of New York. And it's much easier to say that Javits, what difference does it make which line he's on or where? As long as he's on the ballot, you think he's good, as I do, that's all I want to do. And I'm going to be very brief, Senator, because I want to campaign after this is over, and I have some of my students joining me today, and we're going to go out and we're going to do our very best. And I hope that anyone who can hear or listen to me in some way would really join us, because I think we would be doing ourselves such a disservice if we didn't return Senator Javits to the Senate.
NCAP, Nurses Coalition for Action Politics, the political action arm of the American Nursing Association, endorses Jacob Javits. He has been our friend for 24 years. He has sponsored and steered through Congress legislation on community health centers, community mental health centers, health planning, migrant health problem, hypertension, grants to help disadvantaged students to enter nursing. He was an early key supporter of Medicare, Medicaid. He authored the Pension Reform Act and other labor legislation. He has been a strong supporter of biomedical and nursing research. Jacob Javits has been on our side consistently, effectively, time and time again. He needs us, and we heartily support Jacob Javits.
Well, thank you all very much for coming to the press conference, and I take great pleasure and great pride in the endorsement of the women who are here, those who have endorsed me for their organizations, Lugenia Gordon and Florence Rice, for the Independent Black Women's Political Caucus, and Sadie Smalls for the state nurses, and Ann Huebner for National Ripoff as the president of the New York organization. And to these distinguished women who've endorsed me personally, Carol Lamberg for the New York Housing Conference, of which she is, by way of description, staff director, and Rita Hauser, one of our most eminent lawyers in the international field and distinguished international servant herself, and Lorraine Colville. Professor Colville has been with me for many years and a marvelous friend and wonderful advocate. And I say a few things that are going to help your group to campaign today. There are a number of women who have let us know that they support me. We have a written record of them. I'll read them off, who've all with their personal, not organizational endorsement, but with an organizational description. Clara Fox, who was executive director of the Settlement Housing Fund for settlement houses. Lee Goodwin, senior vice president Merrill Lynch, and a distinguished servant with a fine record. Joyce Black, the president of the Daycare Council of New York. I might say that that's one of my big campaigns for women, and that is adequate daycare slots. And the only way to get them is to make it attractive to business concerns to have daycare centers in their offices or factories. That is the European system, and that is a system which we must emulate here because 9/10 of the children who should be in daycare and whose mothers can work cannot be because we simply don't have the slots for them. It's a very serious matter. And I have advocated giving a 10% investment tax credit to business concerns that will maintain daycare centers. Dorothy Hare, president of the American Foundation for Maternal and Child Health, Sister Dorothy Ann Kelly, president of the College of New Rochelle, Jennifer Moore, former president of the New York State Society of Physicians Assistants, and Mary Lasker, who's well known to you as a great patron of music and the arts, Molly Broad, vice president for government affairs of Syracuse University, and Harriet Morris, director of the Committee on Health of the New York State Senate, all of whom have endorsed me for election to the Senate. Now, as I said, I'd say a word about the record so that Lorraine students may do a day of campaigning. It is interesting that I have had two breakthroughs in the Senate for women. One, I named the first girl page and fought a struggle which took several years to get my colleagues to accept girl pages and was finally successful. That I've considered a great breakthrough. And it has been said a little while ago by Lugenia Gordon, I also named the first black page. Though that wasn't the big job, it was just the breakthrough, and the first Hispanic page. And the opposition was the greatest to girls. Very peculiar reasons were advanced why they shouldn't be made pages. All of them, of course, were ridiculous, and after a couple of years, we were successful. And now one of the nicest things about the Senate and House floors is that this breakthrough has given us young, attractive kids to run little errands, and it's really one of the nicest things about the Senate. Similarly, I had a breakthrough with the eligibility of women to the military service academies. I appointed the first one to the Naval Academy. She never got in, so tough was the opposition. And I didn't appoint another, kept her on for 3 years until she got beyond the age when she could be appointed. And then we passed a law requiring the academies to take in women, and of course it is now standard and established practice. So these are very gratifying things to me. It's already been mentioned that the inclusion of sex in the Civil Rights Act of 64, the landmark Civil Rights Act, was heavily attributable to my sponsorship of that particular proposition, with others, of course. That I worked to get the Civil Rights Commission, which has been traditionally headed by Father Hesburgh of Notre Dame, to expand its jurisdiction to include cases of sex discrimination. That I worked for favorable tax legislation, which we now have, for child and dependent care expenses. But there's a long way to go in respect of taxation, in respect of the marriage penalty and income taxes and so on, which have returned to the Senate, I will undertake. That I've been very active in joining with Ted Kennedy in my committee. He's chairman of the Health Subcommittee. In respect of the teenage pregnancy programs, over violent opposition in rape prevention and treatment, in shelter and counseling services for battered women, and in reducing women effectively into alcohol, drug abuse, and mental health treatment programs. And of course, I consider my work for non-discrimination in housing to be a critical aspect of that effort, of my total effort for non-discrimination. It'll interest you to know that I'm the author of the compromise on athletics for women in educational institutions, a higher education. The ridiculous effort was made to discredit this legislation on the ground that it would require football teams for women mixed with men. Such nonsense as you have never heard. Well, the formula developed under Title IX of the Higher Education Act now makes it very clear that equal opportunity for women in education means what we spend and the openings we give, not some tortured construction which would put women into physical confrontation with men. And nonetheless, over the years, we've had these very serious matters to contend with. Now, we are issuing today, and I hope that the members of the press and media who are here will be sure to have copies, a white paper on women, on issues which affect women in the United States, which give details of the work which I've done and the work which I propose to do in respect of full equal opportunity for women. It is well known that I am a strong supporter of the ERA, though I might say, unlike Ms. Holzman, I don't claim sole credit for everything in sight. I don't think that that's the way you get along and get things done in the Congress of the United States. The leading figure in the Senate respecting the ERA has been Senator Barr of Indiana, a Democrat. And I'm very pleased that on my side of the aisle, among Republicans, I think I have been as leading a figure as anyone to see that the amendment got through and that the extension of time for states to ratify the amendment also got through. And finally, I have always had a sharp eye out for women who could qualify for high places in the judiciary, in the executive branch, and in public policy-making positions. As a note to the independent black woman, I might tell you that I first offered Amalia Kearse the nomination for the district court. And she wanted to go to the Circuit Court of Appeal. And so she waited a little while, turned me down, and finally did get to the Circuit Court of Appeal. I might say she's quite a gambler, because that doesn't always happen. But I did offer it to her. And of course, I had a good deal to do with the careers of many others, including Eleanor Holmes Norton and Barbara Thomas, who's just been made a member of the SEC. So I know how to get things done in the Senate, and the experience and clout and seniority which New York has given me will be used to great advantage, as it has been up to now, in everything that's done in the Senate if the people return. Thank you all so very much for being here on such an inclement day and expressing in my behalf your convictions. The bombing to punish Iran and kill thousands of Iranians would have been highly counterproductive and thrown the Middle East into even worse chaos than it is.
Did you go into AP? You already have it?
I didn't see one. I see one. Thank you very much.
This afternoon.
Oh, thank you.
In a in an effort to rescue Entebbe stock. I might have made that decision if I were present, I cannot say. But that was an option, although it surely would have meant the loss of some of the lives of the hospital. But it was an option, and the president did not take it. And he's president, and he's our country, and we must assume that that's our decision.
Was that an option you suggested to him?
The Entebbe raid? Well, all of these conversations which I have had are privileged. I hope you won't ask me the minute you open that door, you think this time he finished. But I cannot see the bomb at all. And I would have cut off the oil, and only Lord knows what would have happened to this world. And I think it's reckless, and I think indicates that my Republican opponent knows as little about the foreign policy of this country as I've said he knows, to wit, very. Very little.
What do you have a comment to make about Reagan's comments a few days ago about this
humiliation and
disgrace?
Well, it certainly is a humiliation and a disgrace for which our country as a whole is unhappily responsible, in the sense that it happened, and that the perception of people around the world has been that we've been humiliated in this matter. I wouldn't say disgrace. But as to the fault which he charged to Carter's foreign policy, I think there's some justification for that, in the sense that the perception was not around, as it was with the Israelis, that we wouldn't let it stand at that, that we would take some immediate responsive action, which of course we didn't. But I cannot second guess on a matter of this kind the President of the United States. In short, I think there is something to Governor Reagan's criticism. I don't believe it's the whole story.
Do you want to ask Ali?
I'm
Oh, you do.
Okay. Anything else?
Let me see. Well, you don't want to tell us what you advised him. Is there anything you would have preferred?
Well, let me say this. Let me say that hot pursuit was certainly one option that was laid before the president.
By the Senate president?
By those of the Senator Church and I, who were the operative figures.
What else was an option? Oh, okay. I respect that. Okay. Thank you very much.
Who knows what would have happened? We really don't. Both Entebbe and Mogadishu are instances of where hot pursuit worked. But in this case, in view of the nature of the seizure and the close quarters in which it would have had to take place, I really must say we had to run the serious risk of some casualties among those who were held hostage. Cannot be avoided. So I cannot assess the president as being responsible for not doing it. It's a very tough decision. And what I would have done if I had been president, I really can't tell you. I don't know.
So the strongest thing you can say about D'Amato is that he was reckless in making those comments?
Well, I think it not only indicates recklessness, but indicates a complete lack of understanding as to the consequences of such reckless action, which would have been catastrophic for our country and the whole free world, and could have spun the world into a deep depression. we're in tough shape enough economically. That would really have done it.
Good luck in your
conference. Well, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't get them released.
Thank you.
This is Alan Nicholson in New York City with Senator Javits. Senator Jacob Javits asked the people of New York today to consider the alternatives in making up their mind about the Senate race. In a debate in New York City, he said he's got all the qualities his opponents have been promising, and they are in place now. He labeled as nonsense questions about his age and health. The cut runs 48 seconds and begins on my count. 3, 2, 1.
Considering the asset the people had built up, a quarter of a century of seniority and power, that it seemed inconceivable to me that for the alternatives which are presented of a complete lack of experience in the federal government and starting as a complete freshman and novice, which Mr. D'Amato would have to do, and coming out of the House with a record with Ms. Holtzman does of a strange lapse in terms of the security of our nation, it just seems to me that in the interests of the people, it's my duty to press that choice. Why not? I think that's what the people ought to ask themselves, and that all the talk about my health and my infirmity and whatnot is so much nonsense. Here I am, debating, campaigning, moving about as active as either of my opponents.